This episode of She Explores is sponsored by Columbia Sportswear and their OutDry Extreme technology. It's used in shells, jackets, pants, and boots to keep you dry and ventilated. Stay tuned for later in the episode to learn more about how it works. Stay dry and comfortable no matter what. Learn more by visiting Columbia.com. I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores. Two items before we get started. First, most of the music you'll hear on today's episode was originally composed by Liam McNally, a friend of the podcast. I just wanted to say that I'm super grateful to him for listening to the show and taking the time to craft music that's such a perfect fit. Second, if you haven't already joined, I hope you'll check out our She Explores podcast Facebook group, linked in the show notes. It's a great way to connect with other listeners and guests, ask questions about outdoor gear and upcoming trips, and talk about previous episodes. On with the show.
I had never considered myself a risk taker.
It is super important to differentiate risk from unnecessary risk.
We soon got to a river crossing, and that was the first time where we stopped to evaluate the risk.
So it turns out that this hike, the thing I thought was so risky and so selfish, was not only good for me, it was good for my kids too.
Would I call myself a risk taker? Yeah, I think I'm a risk taker, but I'm more calculated these days.
And I sort of go into most of these situations thinking, where can I take some risk? What expectations or thoughts about how things are going to work can I change and do it completely differently?
On just Friday of last week, I stood out on my own figurative ledge, and I asked you to share your own interpretation of risk and the outdoors. In a super short period of time, you guys all delivered, which I really appreciate. I'm not able to include all the submissions in this episode. It would make for too long a show, but I pulled together some stories that are reflective of the whole. Risks are relative, but as I listened to your voices, I couldn't help but think, it's only a risk if you have something to lose. Maybe it's comfort, safety, a sense of self. And on the flip side, it's often a risk if you have something to gain.
So I want to question what we consider risk. Often I think what we consider risk today is maybe not really what we consider risky 100 years ago, and things that are statistically risky today, like driving a car, we've normalized to make ourselves feel safe doing those things.
This is Mara, questioning the relativity of risk. What works for her might not work for someone else.
Well, last summer I embarked on a 2-week solo kayaking trip in British Columbia. I opted, much to the dismay of my parents and my family and my friends, not to take a spot beacon or GPS or satellite phone or any of those things that I could reach out where I endangered. The trip for me was about understanding my limits and my relationship to the sea, and the only way for me to do that was to put completely my responsibility in my own hands, without the option of having such a device that I could call to safety. I didn't want that in the back of my mind. While these electronics and these devices are standard now, and they're definitely good, I don't want to insinuate that they're not. They've saved a lot of lives. I just don't think they're always necessary, and I don't believe we're not safe without them. For hundreds of years, we've worked without satellites to guide and connect us, and we didn't consider it unduly risky. I guess it is risky on some levels, and people ask, why not just have it in the case of emergencies? But in weighing the risks on my trip, I found myself strong enough to trust in my own abilities. So really, I want us to sit back and question, what really is risk? And what is society telling us, especially as women, is risky?
Hi, my name is Rebecca, and I am a trail runner and hiker from New Hampshire. I had never considered myself a risk taker. I was always a planner, keeping my head down, sticking to my plan, my outline, checking off one item at a time in a logical order. This had been the way I was my whole life, until about 4 years ago when I became a trail runner and a hiker. I was exploring new places with new people and feeling things I couldn't describe. The planner in me was still apparent, but growing ever so faint. I was stepping out of my comfort zone. In August of 2017, I prepared for my first backpacking trip. I had finished my first ultra marathon, had done many hikes, and loved to car camp. I studied maps and guidebooks, packed and repacked my pack, left an itinerary, did all the right things. My inner planner was showing. 19 miles and 13 hours into my backpacking trip, I had to make the heartbreaking decision to call for a ride home when I reached the next section of the trail in the dark, with ferns and thorn bushes overgrown and a brook raging below me. Backpacking can and probably will break your heart. It shows you your potential, your hopes, your fears. I don't look at this as something negative, however. I learned that I could carry a 30-pound pack for 19 miles. I laughed with one of my new best friends. I ate wild blackberries. I saw countless natural beauties, such as mushrooms, salamanders, moss, and ferns. And when things didn't go how I planned, I was picked up by a friend of a friend, someone who moments before had been a stranger that owed me nothing. The hiking community gives me faith that people are inherently good. Hiking challenges me, and it heals me. I didn't reach the destination, but I sure as heck enjoyed the journey. Be safe. Don't be afraid to fail in life and in hiking. Had I not taken this risk, I would have never experienced all of these beautiful things and learned all these valuable lessons. I encourage you all to step out of your comfort zone and take a risk.
Sometimes stepping out of your comfort zone means redefining the expectations you have for yourself.
My most memorable story of taking risk was actually last year when I decided to take on basic alpine climbing through a class here in Seattle of the Washington Alpine Club.
This is Karen Wang. You might remember her from way back. Episode 9 of She Explores, after the PCT.
It was probably the most scariest, riskiest, hardest thing I have ever done physically, mentally in my life. Mostly because I did not know it was going to challenge me in that way. Not that I thought rock climbing or mountaineering, any of those skills were easy, but I just did not know it was going to be that difficult for me. As a person who does not usually take risks at all, which is funny because I think people think I do, but I'm actually a really fearful and non-risky person. I like to do things super safe, and it's just a huge challenge for me. In the end, I push myself so hard with the support of, you know, my instructors and my classmates and everybody, that I was able to overcome that mental block I had. And in the end of the class, it was probably the best thing that I have ever done in my life, because I was just so, so terrified. Not that I was terrified that I was going to die or fall or the system was going to fail, but I think just trusting my own footsteps. I would definitely encourage others to try new things in the outdoors, whatever it is, even if it's just like a small baby steps. It doesn't have to be something huge, but a tiny little thing that you think will be challenging for you, but also attainable. I think it'll just change you in ways that you don't even know.
So, I don't know, in the outdoors, I've just made my best decisions.
Shelby's voice might sound familiar if you listen to the podcast Wild Ideas Worth Living. It's host Shelby Stanger.
I've always been wanting to try, well, there's two things. The first is rock climbing. I haven't tried it because I just don't know any rock climbers. And I mean, I'd taken a couple of kids through outdoor outreach rock climbing, but you know, mostly I was belaying them and climbing these easy routes, but I want to really rock climb. So I recently took a class. It was an all-women's rock climbing class with REI, and it was awesome. These women, they basically just set up three routes and said, climb it. I thought I was going to be pretty good because I tried it at the gym before and I'm a pretty decent athlete, but I was terrible and it was awesome. I loved learning something new that I wasn't great at and I'm hooked. So I joined a rock climbing gym near my house and I know it's not the same as being outdoors, but I'm trying to find friends to take me outside. I don't know. It's just a different world being on the rock. It's terrifying and exhilarating, and there's so many things going on at the same time. The other thing I want to try is a through hike. I just don't love being dirty, sweaty, and hot. And where we live pretty much in the desert. So when you camp, you just get really dirty. It's really hot. And I'm used to surfing and camping on the beach, and that's totally different than through hiking through the desert. So yes, I want to try through hiking, and I think I'm going to spend some time in Yosemite this summer. Would I call myself a risk taker? Yeah, I think I'm a risk taker, but I'm more calculated these days. I'm just older. I don't run when I'm injured. I don't surf when I'm exhausted.
Speaking of through hikes, this is Becky Jensen, a freelance writer in Fort Collins, Colorado. Becky had a transformative experience on the Colorado Trail.
In the summer of 2016, I strapped on my backpack and headed into the mountains alone to escape reality. Up until that point, I had spent the majority of my life putting the needs of others ahead of my own. My kids, my partner, work, pets, my house, they all came first. I was spent. You know, by the time I was 45, there wasn't much left of me. And so I took a risk in the outdoors to save myself, really. I decided to hike the Colorado Trail, which is a 500-mile path between Denver and Durango. And I'd gone backpacking a few times, but never alone and never this far. So when I stepped on the trail that first day, I wasn't responsible for anyone or anything except me, and I felt instant relief. It felt great. But I quickly found out that hiking for 5 weeks in the Colorado mountains is not a slam dunk. I dealt with aggressive animals. I was scared of sleeping alone in my tent. I was chased by lightning. I lost gear, and I took a really hard and embarrassing fall that left me bruised and bleeding. But accepting the risk of hiking the Colorado Trail and the fears and challenges I faced along the way were a huge boost to my self-confidence. And it connected me to these reserves of strength that I didn't know I had. And stepping away from home for 5 weeks also gave my relationships room to breathe, which was really a good thing. And it gave me time to reflect on my own behavior and to focus on how I want to live a life that's true to me. And so while I was on the trail, I realized my fiance and I were both good people. We just weren't good for each other. And so we eventually broke up. And I also realized I was overmothering my poor kids. And so when I got back home, I started asking my boys to do more for themselves. And they blossomed. And then I blossomed because our relationship blossomed. So it turns out that this hike, the thing I thought was so risky and so selfish, was not only good for me, it was good for my kids too. And one more little risk-related thing that I wanted to share. My entire life, I never wanted a tattoo. Not even a tiny little secret one that was hidden and people couldn't see. There just never seemed to be a good enough reason to get permanently inked, and lots of other ways I wanted to spend my money. But my time on the Colorado Trail was so powerful and so special that I got a trail-related tattoo that's about 10 inches long, and it covers my right shoulder. And I thought getting a tattoo was fitting. You know, I made a promise on the trail to be true to myself. And the tattoo seemed like a really good way to permanently ink that deal.
So my story is I recently moved to Hawaii.
This is Megan Bixel.
And it was a very difficult move in many ways. A lot of unexpected, well, I'll call them waves. So things kept coming out of the blue one after the other. And so it was wave after wave and I was tumbled around and felt like I couldn't catch my breath or come up for air. I was just kept hitting wave after wave after wave and they just kept coming. It was very difficult. Finally landed here on the island and some more waves came crashing down and I kind of just kept going, trying to keep paddling or swimming or breathing as best as I could until I finally kind of got myself into a more stable situation and could take a breath and could enjoy it and could soak up how beautiful this place is. And in celebration, I went surfing. I've never surfed before, so it was definitely a risk. I had thoughts through my head about sharks and drowning and who knows what, anything dangerous about surfing. There are a lot of things, I suppose, but I ended up trying it, and it really mirrored how I had been feeling the past few months in that I was literally fighting through wave after wave after wave, trying to swim and paddle my way to a more calm area so that then I could take my board and catch the wave instead of fight the wave and stand up and make it mine. And it was so much fun. It was hard, but it was so much fun. I stood up and I could see the shoreline and the city of Honolulu and the sky and the water. And it was like a little mini roller coaster just for me. It was so much fun. I fell off instantly and came up laughing and sputtering and couldn't wait to do it again. So I hopped back on my board and fought wave after wave after wave and got to the calm place and turned around and caught the next wave and stood up and enjoyed it again. And so I think it just really, it really put it into perspective like how hard I had been fighting and how much I'd been pushing to get to that calm place and to make it mine and make it fun. And I don't know, I just really enjoyed the mirroring of the surfing activity, how it mirrored my life kind of perfectly and very poetically.
The sound my ankle made when it snapped in two places after a climbing fall stayed with me for a really long time. Like, it was a terrible sound.
This is Nikki Frumkin, the painter behind Drawn to High Places. And we'll hear more about her break after this one. This episode of She Explores is sponsored by Columbia Sportswear and their OutDry Extreme technology. OutDry Extreme is Columbia's first ever waterproof and breathable jackets and pants with a waterproof layer on the outside and fabric on the inside. With waterproof seam taping applied directly to the outside of the garment and a wicking next-to-skin membrane inside, you'll stay absolutely dry and comfortable no matter what. I love the OutDry Extreme because it considers the fact that, especially when hiking, moisture comes from the elements outside and also develops on the inside as you exert yourself on the trail. I've used the OutDry Extreme on both coasts, hiking the White Mountains of New Hampshire and camping on the Olympic Peninsula. You can see me testing the OutDry Extreme technology on the rainy Olympic Peninsula in Columbia's short film, Offline. Find it on their YouTube channel or linked in our show notes. Stay dry and comfortable no matter what. Learn more at Columbia.com. We're back. Here's painter Nikki Frumkin.
The sound my ankle made when it snapped in two places after a climbing fall stayed with me for a really long time. Like, it was a terrible sound. And it made me scared. I didn't want it to happen again. And so during that year that it took to heal, I realized that I was not a risk taker anymore. And in the past, it had been something I was really proud of. It was part of my identity. And I was like, yeah, I'm a risk taker. This is a wonderful thing. It like lets me learn and grow. And that was a little bit gone. But during that time, I was also painting a lot. And I realized that risk taking is so essential to painting. And without it, your paintings die a little bit. They're not as exciting. They don't have as much movement and energy. And so I realized I needed to sort of push back into that risk-taking mindset and like be open to new possibilities that might lead to great things that I wouldn't otherwise have experienced. So for example, like if you spill your paint all over your paper, that might lead to something wonderful that you wouldn't otherwise have experienced. And you're not going to intentionally spill paint all over your favorite painting, because who does that? But once it's happened, it's really great to look at it and think, I wonder where this could lead. And I realized that attitude was sort of missing from my mountains and my climbing. So sort of starting to think about like how I could bring that back in, bring in that chaos and that joy in a way that was safe, right? I didn't want to hurt myself again, but I also wanted to be able to experience new things. And so as I kept painting and as I kept climbing mountains, the risk-taking sort of bounced back and forth. The more risks I took in art, the more comfortable I was taking them in the mountains and trying new things. I'm really scared of heights now. I have a huge fear of exposure. And I realized that I need to try these things in small steps. You need to just spill the paint all over the high places and just do it. That journey has been pretty amazing. And I sort of go into most of these situations thinking, where can I take some risk? What expectations or thoughts about how things are going to work, can I change and do it completely differently?
Hello, my name is Claire Giordano.
Claire is also an artist. Art is helping Nikki find her riskier side. And for Claire, painting outside is the risk in and of itself.
I was sitting on the rim of Bryce when a fifth selfie stick encroached on my view, but I could barely even notice it. I was focused on my painting, trying to capture the impossibly detailed landscape using my limited palette and too large of a brush. For most of my life, painting had been something very solitary, hidden away at home or the studio, completely alone, maybe my cat, but no other people. Taking that practice outside, into the presence of complete strangers, felt like one of the riskiest things, and honestly, some of the scariest things I had ever done. The first time I painted in front of people, my audience was a 6-year-old child who was just as fascinated by a very large and quite stinky flower as I was. She watched as my pen brought it to life on a page, and slowly my racing heart slowed. I felt very vulnerable, letting someone else watch me create, letting them witness my mistakes, and how I tried, and probably failed, to learn from them. I was afraid of what people might think of what they would see when they looked at my half-finished pieces. But that child's smile showed me that I was onto something. It hasn't gotten any easier. My heart still races a little bit when someone approaches me on the trail in the middle of a painting. Usually I'm dropping the sky in or looking at a ridge or a lake, and I think it looks really horrible. They stop often and sit with me and ask questions. I continue to paint outside, even though it's hard, to take that risk, because there is magic, I think, in inviting others into that creative process with me. On that ledge of a Bryce Canyon, the 80 tourists crowded really close, taking pictures and speaking in a language I did not know. After about 10 minutes, however, they began to quiet. Some sat down beside me, others behind. I noticed phones and selfie sticks began to hang limply from their hands, and it looked from my painting to the incredible vista. It got really, really quiet. I realized that my painting had created a connection to that landscape, and I think I helped them stop. I really see it more than they could through too many selfies and their phones or a camera, by simply spending time quietly observing. My paintings are a deeply personal process. But experiences like this mean I keep going outside, continue to paint, continue to take that risk of letting other people see me, no matter how many show up, whether it's one or none or 10. To share that little part of myself that flows onto the page and to invite others into that space of connection with me.
My name is Cherie Angela Matthews. I live on the northeast coast of England. But this weekend, I took a risk and drove over 5 hours to get to Snowdonia's National Park in Wales. This weekend, I'm wild swimming in mountain lakes. I was apprehensive about taking this risk, about trying this, because I'm a black British woman and I don't see anyone like me wild swimming. So we went into the mountains, stripped off, put on our wetsuits and my special dreadscape swimming cap for my dreads, and we got into this pure blue lake. It was so cold and exhilarating. We swam with the Canadian geese, who squawked our welcome into the water, and it was so amazing. And I just thought, I'm doing this. I'm not thinking about it. I'm not over-analyzing it. I'm just doing it. And my body felt amazing. I want to keep doing this. And I want to introduce other women like me to this. And I can only do that by practicing wild swimming.
I take every risk I see mentally, and yet in physical form, I struggle to act on them. I was a much riskier child until I was told I needed to tone it down for the fact that it could possibly ruin my prospective career as a dancer.
This is Tori Duhame. For her, taking a risk means giving up something she loves and trading it in for another love.
I can't say I regret that by any chance. My dance career has been extremely informative, and I've made many relationships as a choreographer and photographer to my relationship to risk and love for outdoor recreation. But I've also come to a place where I want the risk to actually exist and not just dissect it for choreographic input. I've stepped away from my dance jobs currently to take off the weight of fearing an unsuccessful career in order to explore my recreational risks and desires. That itself might be the biggest leap yet. Walking away from a career I've trained for my whole life just to climb a mountain and that be enough. To make myself trail run and not let myself fear ruining my knees. To not measure my success in audience responses, reviews, or how much my research has translated, but to simply reach a peak and be the only one that knows or cares that it happened. To ski a line that could wreck me, but enjoy it without hesitation. It's a daily task, and it's a personal discipline I've missed since graduating and training every day. But risk certainly isn't just about the scale of survival. It's embedded in my own judgment of what I can and cannot do. And for possibly the first time in my life, stepping into the risks I've imagined myself taking has made me more like the woman I want to be than the dancer I was trying to prove I could be. And at 25, I may be putting my body in a position to never be able to dance like I did even a year ago, ever again. We only get small gaps of time as a dancer to have a full career as a mover. But I'm training my body also to take me places and do things I never thought I was capable of. And that's a risk worth taking. And I'm a much happier person for it now.
I got rejected from a job today that I really wanted and I was really excited about, but I realize that it's okay because it's opening up space for me to do something that I've been really afraid of. I've always followed the path that, you know, seems correct or just sort of makes sense in life, like from job to job and building upon, you know, the titles that I have and all of this. And I plan on quitting the job that I'm currently at the end of June and leaving with my partner to go on a road trip out west. I'm from the East Coast and I'm really excited and a little bit scared about living that closely with my partner. And I'm also really worried about, you know, the finances of it. I've always been very responsible because I do have about $16,000 in student loans and it's like a lot to live with and I have a car payment. However, what I'm really excited about too with this road trip is I have decided to finally start writing my story about being an Asian American adoptee and how the outdoors have shaped the person that I am and how it's the only sanctuary, it's the only place where I feel truly comfortable and connected to something and I can forget that I don't fit into a space that oftentimes is very white in my career and that I am choosing to walk into the light instead of hiding a lot of stress and anxiety and depression in the darkness, and that I can choose to free myself. And I'm just really looking forward to this road trip, to opening up myself and just cracking open a lot of things that I've held back and having the time to write, to create, and to simply breathe, to be free. So this is my next big adventure. Job rejection today, quitting my job in a few months, road tripping, and writing about being an adoptee and my journey through the outdoors. So yeah, it's heady, but I'm excited.
My name is Danielle O'Farrell and my trail name is Giggles. And last year in 2017, I had the pleasure of hiking the Pacific Crest Trail. When hiking, I had always wanted to summit Whitney. When I got to the Sierras, it was a high snow year, so I was unsure if it would be safe to summit Mount Whitney. Luckily, I had a friend who was 4 days in front of me, and he sent me a message telling me that Whitney only had 2 switchbacks covered in snow. This was a really exciting realization for me because it meant that I was going to be able to hike Whitney, but it also meant that perhaps I would be able to pursue a dream that I had of trying to do a sunrise summit of Whitney. I threw it out as an idea to the group of people that I was hiking with at the time, and the group was comprised of all guys and one girl. And all the guys were like, that sounds awful, I don't want to wake up that early, that sounds dumb. And the one other girl was like, well, that could be kind of cool. And so the two of us decided to go for it. And that meant waking up at 1 in the morning when it was still dark and starting to hike. She was a little bit faster than I was, but because my headlamp was stronger, I went first. And so we started, and all we could see was white of the snow and then pitch black above it. We soon got to a river crossing, and that was the first time where we stopped to evaluate the risk. We decided in our little meeting that if we didn't get across, we would just go back to bed. And if we did, we would then be trying to get to the top. And we made it across the little river and started on our journey. At some point, we reached a big open space that we thought was a frozen lake, and we turned off our headlamps, and above us, all we could see was an expanse of stars. Eventually, we started going up, and unlike what my friend had said, so far everything had been covered in snow. So what we were doing was we were going through the snow to little rock patches that we could see, kind of starting to make our way upwards. And everything looked like a footprint, and we were having a lot of trouble finding the trail. It took us 30 minutes to go 0.2 miles when normally we would go 1.5 miles in 30 minutes. And we were using a GPS to navigate because it was too dark for a map and compass. And at some point, the GPS started glitching. And this is when I began getting nervous. And I thought, well, worst comes to worst, we're just going to get on one of these rock patches and stay here until the sun comes up. And we gave it one more go, and luckily we were able to find the trail. And we started going up the final switchbacks. One of them was covered in snow, and when we reached it, we knew that we were going to have to rock scramble around it. And the girl I was with did not want to rock scramble in the dark, but as a rock climber, I felt fine with it. So I said, I'm just going to go up and see what it's like. and I knew she was very competitive, and so was I. So when I got to the top, I just heard, "I'm coming!" And the two of us made it up. We're now at the final stretch to get to the top, and we can see the summit, and we know that the sun is starting to rise. And there's one final snowfield between us and the top, because we had lost the trail yet again. And I determined that we could just go straight up the snowfield to get there. She was having some trouble breathing with the altitude, but she knew this and was taking her time. So I turned to her and said, "If it's okay with you, I'm just gonna go." So I went straight up the snowfield, and right as I got to the top, the sun was rising, and I was the first person to have hiked up Whitney that day. And I turned around, and she was there, just getting to the top with me. And it was one of the most incredible experiences I've had outside.
A lot of the submissions I received centered around solo excursions, and it makes sense. It's inherently risky to go it alone. It feels like everything is on you, but that can be a good thing if you're prepared.
Hi, my name's Ashley, and the biggest risk that I've taken outdoors was actually a few weeks ago when I planned a solo backpacking trip to Havasu Pie. I was originally supposed to go with a few family friends, but they couldn't get permits, so ultimately it was just me. During the planning of the trip, I was super skeptical and just uneasy about going by myself, being surrounded by enormous canyons and being with so many strangers down at the campground and passing them through the canyons. I didn't really know what to think, but looking back on it, I'm really happy that I ended up going alone, planning alone, backpacking alone, hiking alone, sleeping alone, because the biggest risk that I took was to ultimately step out of my comfort zone and do something totally alone. Whether it was the drive there, the hike in, the hike out, the camping, I really had a chance to center myself and be more mindful when I got back into reality of just my surroundings, the community, different people in my life. I think taking solo trips and taking that big risk of doing things by yourself really helps you grow as a person and understand different situations instead of just completely reacting. So I'm super thankful that I was able to step out of my comfort zone, take that huge risk, and go by myself. I learned so much about myself and my surroundings, and while I was in Havasu Pie, I had a chance to listen to the birds more, be on my own time, go at my own pace, enjoy the waters, the blue-green waters, enjoy the waterfalls, talk to different people as I passed them on the trail, or while I was at a waterfall, I got to know different people from around the world. Now I'm looking at other trips to take, not just by myself, but to include others and help them get out of their comfort zones. So I think that has been my biggest risk so far in the outdoors.
Helly also shared her very first solo experience.
I've been pursuing my doctorate degree for a few years, and they have provided me with the opportunity to get out and recharge and recenter. And I guess that in itself is a bit of a risk, being alone in the woods for a few days. However, that part isn't really what scares me. It's being alone in the woods with someone else. And so for that reason, I will choose these really remote trail systems. And for me, that means going into the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. And it was the first of these treks that I think I took the biggest risk. I'd planned to do about a 40-mile loop over 4 days and 3 nights. However, a few days before setting out, it looked like a pretty significant storm system was moving through and would interfere with my trip. My friends and family encouraged me to cancel. However, we never know what the weather's going to do, and that was a risk I was willing to take. On the second day, I hit the ridgeline. I was along a section of the Appalachian Trail, and I had enough service to check the weather, and it became clear that I was indeed going to get caught in that storm. So I decided to go through with my backup plan, which was to just push through on the second day and cover about 18 miles, which would put me at 5 miles from the trailhead on the third day. It was the wind that woke me up on the third morning. It was so strong, and I knew I needed to get out of the woods as fast as possible, so I packed up and hit the trail. However, due to my previously long day and the fact that I had a 1,500-foot climb first thing, I was moving at a frustratingly slow speed. Eventually, the winds became so strong that the trees began to fall. I was surrounded by this incredible booming noise. Every other gust, it seemed, all around me, they were falling, and it was terrifying. I started stopping with each gust and just staring at the treetops, hoping that if a tree close to me was about to fall, I would see it enough time to move. Probably a stupid plan, but it made sense in my head. And then once I did come up the other side of the ridge and was coming down the mountain, the winds on that side were so strong that they were forcing me backwards with each step that I took. So it was the longest and slowest 5 miles of my life, but I did finally come out at the trailhead, which is also at a campground. And the camp hosts saw me come out of the woods, and they flagged me down and got me inside and informed me that the park had performed an emergency evacuation that day because the gusts had been 90 to 100 miles per hour. And all of the roads were closed due to the downed trees. So it is an experience that I feel fortunate for coming out on the other side of. But it's not an experience that I regret. As I said, it was my first solo trek, and I have been on others since, and they always prove to be these really empowering and positive experiences. So I guess all that to say is that sometimes we make stupid choices and we take risks, but they're not always necessarily a bad thing. So I certainly hope that you are safe and have fun with the risks that you take.
I'm a huge proponent of embracing discomfort in the outdoors, and oftentimes that means taking risks. One of my climbing partners and I have dubbed ourselves TCOS, Team Cries on Summit, because we've broken down so many times on various climbs.
This is Brooke Weber sharing our very last story today.
It definitely doesn't have to be on the summit either. It could have been during a challenging technical maneuver on the way up, pure exhaustion on the way down, simply neglecting to eat enough calories, feet that feel like raw hamburger, or the nausea that sometimes comes with climbing at altitude. These emotional moments can be embarrassing and awkward and difficult to embrace, and I usually end up hiding behind sunglasses or taking time away from the group. Seems that no matter the climb, I'm guaranteed to be massively uncomfortable at one point or another. Overall, I've been pretty lucky. Aside from one instance where I went hypothermic on Mount Hood, I've had a relatively casualty-free experience in the backcountry. I owe this to my friends and climbing mates. There is so much danger in climbing. It feels like a million things could potentially go wrong. But keeping informed and aware makes the risk levels go down significantly. This includes knowing the route, understanding the weather, being aware of avalanche conditions, and bringing the right gear. I'm so grateful to have friends who are trained and knowledgeable with a similar aversion to climbing in high-risk conditions that I always feel pretty safe with them. I also make sure to trust my intuition and speak up when I'm uncomfortable with any group decisions. That isn't to say that you can predict everything that will happen outdoors, but the more educated and outspoken you are, the better.
Okay, this last bit from Brooke, this is what I want to leave us with today.
It is super important to differentiate risk from unnecessary risk. Taking risks can lead to photo-worthy experiences that you'll cherish and remember for the rest of your life, because oftentimes these summits did not come easy. But unnecessary risk can lead you into dangerous situations where you have less control over the outcome. I would always encourage people to take healthy risks, but when doing so, be safe and surround yourself with knowledgeable people. You'll likely come out of the other side with a few blisters and a great story.
Let's always remember to differentiate risk from unnecessary risk. Weigh your options, know yourself, and enjoy the rewards. Thank you to everyone who submitted stories for today's episode. Nikki Frumpkin, Claire Giordiano, Daniel O'Farrell, Haley Sia, Karen Wang, Shelby Stanger, Mara, Megan Bixel, Rebecca, Ashley C., Becky Jensen, Cherie Angela Williams, Tori Duhame, and Brooke Weber. All of their portfolios and social handles are linked via she-explorers.com/podcast. Big thank you to Columbia Sportswear for their support this month. Learn more at columbia.com. And if you live near Portland, Oregon, we'll be taping a live She Explores podcast episode this Thursday at 6:30 p.m. at the Columbia flagship store. Details linked in the landing page and on the show notes. If you enjoy She Explores, you'll probably enjoy our sister podcast, Women on the Road. Hosted by Laura Hughes, it's filled with stories of honest experiences of life on the road from the women who've lived them firsthand. And if you enjoyed this episode, please take the time to review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. It'll help other people find us. Even better, share She Explores with a friend. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, so make sure to tag us so we'll see it. Music is by Chris Zabriskie via the Free Music Archive. Original music is by Leah McNally. Both are linked in our show notes. Until next week, have fun out there.